your online community for positive change. Seventh Wave Network.
Good day, and welcome to Reiki, Balancing Form and Essence with Reiki Master and host Phyllis Lay Forimoto, as she shares with you inspiring stories along with her practical wisdom for finding balance with spirit in everyday life. Now here's your host, Phyllis Forimoto.
This is Phyllis Forimoto with Reiki, Balancing Form and Essence. Today we're going to start off a new theme on the program. That is addressing the question, what is mastery? Especially, what is a Reiki master? And I have with me today, with my great pleasure, John Gray. That's G-R-A-Y, not the color. And his lovely wife, Lourdes. And we're pre-recording this in their home in New Hampshire, which I have the pleasure of visiting right now. John, I met John in 1981, I think. And along with his then wife, Beth Gray, both of whom were Reiki masters at the time. We attended a gathering in 1982 of masters who were initiated by Hawaiʻo Takata in Hawaii, mostly to attend a memorial service for her after her death in 1980. And we also had a meeting and had some time to spend together, and that was really a beautiful memory for me. All these years since then, which has been almost 30 years, John has been practicing and teaching Reiki, and I thought that he would be a most wonderful person to start this theme out. I believe that he was the first master that Hawaiʻo Takata initiated. I don't know for sure, but it seems like we're right in the ballpark. And I'd like to welcome you, John, to the show.
Thank you. Thank you. I'm honored to be number one. Actually, I'm honored to be in the show at all. It's interesting. Combination of having worked in Reiki for how many years? 30 years?
Yes, over 30 years now,
yeah,
I think so.
Yeah. And
because you were initiated in 1976?
Yeah, correct.
Yeah. Can you say a little bit about that time?
Takata was in 1975, she had come to the United States and was giving Reiki workshops. And in 1975, she had a heart attack, which she claimed had to do with falling off a ladder, is what she said. But what she realized is that if she continued as the only person that would teach Reiki and then died, that there would be no one to continue the work. So
mm-hmm.
In 1976, she had become well again, if you will, and came back and gave a couple of workshops in our area of Redwood City and Woodside, California. And at that time she asked me whether I'd like to become a Reiki instructor or Reiki master, whatever she said. And I said yes, because we were giving Reiki sessions before church services on a Sunday evening. So she plied me with all of the possibilities, that had to do with becoming a Reiki master. And I took it and liked it. And in 1980, I went, I left California and started giving workshops throughout the United States. And I, as I remember, I gave about, gave workshops to all except about five states in the Union.
Mm-hmm.
So there.
So what, do you remember what the possibilities were of being a Reiki master that Hawaii Otakata told you? Or is that too far away?
What were the possibilities?
Yes, you said that she told you all the benefits of being a Reiki master.
Well, it turns out that being a Reiki master had an elevated position in the minds of other people, so I gained that ability. And I also gained the ability to teach people how to increase their Reiki energy through their hands and able to give mental treatments and give absent treatments,
mm-hmm.
treatments to people from great distances if I wanted to. And I think those are possibilities.
Mm-hmm. Beautiful. And can you describe my grandmother at that time, like how she was for you?
Well, she... I started out with this, the experience of her giving a lecture at what, Trinity Center?
Yes.
Was that it? Trinity Center on a Sunday evening. Beth, my former wife, spent a week in before church services selecting someone who had interesting information to give a talk, and Takata was that person for that particular night. Sunday night she gave a talk. It was interesting to me, and I asked her whether she'd like to give classes at our house in Woodside, California. She said yes, so she came and lived with us and gave about 15 classes, somewhere around something like that. And I became imbued with the idea of the benefits that teaching Reiki gave,
mm-hmm.
gave each person.
Mm-hmm. That's wonderful. And so even though some of the masters that Hawaii Otakata initiated went off into different countries to do their teaching, you really held the fort, so to speak, in the United States and traveled all over teaching.
Teaching and drinking beer. And well, almost. I'm afraid that I did quit drinking in 87, something. When did I quit?
I think it was in the early 80s.
important decision.
Yes, yes. Well, that was... this has been wonderful to hear this part about your meeting Hawaii Otakata and getting into Reiki, and through Reiki, you also met your present wife, Lourdes. Is that true?
Yes, I did. Yeah, she phoned me up from the Washington, D.C. area and asked when I was to give my next class in first degree, and I said, well, not for about 2 or 3 months, and she said, no, when is the next one? So she came up from D.C. to Gloucester, where I was living in Gloucester, Massachusetts, where I was living at the time, and I met her at the train station with a black beret on, and she came and discovered me, didn't you?
I discovered you, yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
So we have the pleasure today of also having Lourdes Gray, John's present wife, here, and she's also, eventually you became a Reiki master also. Huh?
Yes, just fellas, and I wanted to say thank you for inviting both of us to your show. It's a pleasure to be here with you. And yes, I eventually became a Reiki master through John. I ended up getting much more than I bargained for, though, because I also became his wife. I wasn't expecting that at all.
Great. And how is it to be married to a Reiki master? Like, some people think that having one Reiki master in the family is enough. And how is it having two, both of you?
Well, I think that we are a very unusual couple, not just because there is a physical age difference between us, although we don't really notice it. We're very much alike, and we are extremely comfortable with each other. We're best friends, and literally spend 24 hours a day, 7 days a week together. So
I'm liking it,
and yeah. We're still happily married after 12 plus years.
Wonderful.
So it's wonderful having John, and he's been and still is a wonderful teacher. I have learned a lot from him.
Uh-huh. So does it get confusing sometimes being his student and also being his wife?
Somehow we've been able to delineate that very well. And when we are working on, or when he's teaching me something, somehow we're able to slip into that teacher-student role. And then once the lesson is over, then we go back into our normal relationship. And uh-huh. We've been able to accomplish that very easily.
That's wonderful.
Yeah.
How about you, John? Is that your experience also?
Yes. I whenever I'm teaching and Lourdes is there near me or by my side, sometimes I forget details and she comes up with the answer of the details that I've forgotten, and that's comfortable. And when I'm finished that part of the Reiki workshop that involves me, then I can relax, and I do. I'm pretty good at going right to sleep.
So I don't know if I've mentioned this to you listeners, but the 30 years that John's been in Reiki, or actually you've had first degree for more than 30 years. I think, when were you initiated? 1973? Does that seem right?
74.
So it's been 34 years. And he wasn't a spring chicken at the time that he got his first degree. So John's 91 this year. And I want to testify that he eats well, he walks well, and his mind, as you can hear, is still around. So it's great that you can teach John still. That's wonderful.
Thank you.
Yeah, it's great. So there is something else that I wanted to ask you, Lourdes, and that is that when you one of the things that I've noticed in Reiki itself, just in the Reiki life, as we might call it, that often our socialized boundaries really drop away, and we don't pay so much attention to what we should do or what we think other people might think we should do, but we end up just following our hearts. That's a pretty simple thing, but sometimes it really ends up crashing boundaries. And I think that you and John are a great example, age-wise, of sort of crashing people's boundaries about what's appropriate and what's not appropriate. And I just have loved being with the two of you because I see your connection. I see the affection and the great, deep, profound connection you have with each other. And it's really touching for me. And it just, for me, proves that in some way, you know, we're all spirits and we connect with the spirit of who we are as human beings rather than how a person in our own age group or a person in our own culture group or a person in our own religious group or whatever, all those, you know, social mores about finding a partner seem like they've fallen away here, and it's really thrilling. And does that seem like accurate to you?
Oh, absolutely, or? Phyllis, absolutely. It's from the very first moment that John and I met, we felt extremely comfortable with each other. It's as if we had had a connection all our lives.
Uh-huh.
And the
function. Yeah, I was just going to say that maybe some people might even say past lives.
Past lives, yeah, you could even say past lives. And we never took notice of our age difference.
Uh-huh.
It was just an absolute congeniality, and we think alike, we enjoy doing the same things. We can just be home together doing absolutely nothing, and that's all we need.
Wonderful.
Just to be together.
Wonderful. Well, people look high and low to find that kind of bliss. Yeah, wonderful.
We're very, very blessed.
That's wonderful. And do you feel that being Reiki masters and standing, I would say, I can put it this way, standing in this energy of initiation and being with students and teaching them to be themselves also allows you a certain support in your lifestyle?
I think so, absolutely. We are very fortunate to have a wonderful Reiki community that John has built over many, many years, and we're in constant touch with our students, new students, old students, and they have been extremely supportive and helpful to us.
Wonderful. Wonderful.
I think part of it has to do with the physical presence that each of us lend to our association slips away, and that the spiritual presence comes forward.
Beautiful.
I think that is probably the foundation of our relationship.
Wow. That's a beautiful foundation. Thank you for sharing that. And, well, I think the listeners all get the feeling of their relationship, so I'll just move on, though it's very moving to me right now. When you, Lourdes, when did you decide to become... Well, I don't know if the right verb is decide, but when did being a Reiki master come upon you, or how was that for you?
I have to tell you my story, Phyllis. I don't know if I think I told you a little bit before, but I am Cuban American.
Uh-huh.
And I came to the United States when I was 12 years old. And in Cuba, my family had been in the cattle ranching business. When the present administration took over, we were forced out of our land, and eventually had to turn everything over to the government in order to be allowed to come to the United States. And once in the United States, we became involved in the process of living and adjusting to really a brand new world. And I became involved in mortgage banking. I practiced for many, many years. Yet one summer, and this is in 1994, I had a very busy work time. And I thought to myself, gee, how should I go about having a vacation? I only have a weekend free. And
A weekend vacation.
Yeah. And being a very practical person, I decided to look around for something useful to do that weekend.
Mm-hmm.
So I looked through the holistic paper and found a class on Reiki. And I had never heard of Reiki before, so I was totally fascinated by the concept. I had often wondered if there was such a thing as healing energy.
Mm-hmm.
And back in Cuba, in the early days of the Castro administration, the last days of Batista, my mother was involved with a group of women who would go around town helping the poor and the sick. Back in those days, there was no social structure to help the poor. So if you were impoverished and you were sick and couldn't work, your family went without food. Many children went hungry without shoes, clothing, medical help. And my mother would go around and collect money and find doctors and pay for hospitalizations.
Mm-hmm.
But she also worked with energy healers, with herbalists.
And oh, interesting.
Energy healers. And being a little girl, I went along with my mom. So I witnessed things that you would think would be almost miraculous.
Mm-hmm.
And once in the United States, I became sort of disconnected from those times, but I never quite forgot about them.
Right.
And in 1994, looking at that holistic paper and reading the ad about Reiki reminded me of those times, and I wondered if there was such a thing as healing energy.
Mm-hmm.
And I took the class, and it literally changed my life. It was a transformational experience, and I was hooked.
Wow,
I never questioned my path after that.
Isn't that a miracle in and of itself?
It was a miracle for me.
Wonderful. And so did you at that time imagine that you would be teaching and leading people into Reiki too?
All I wanted to do at that time was to immerse myself in Reiki and practice. And I practiced self-treatment. I practiced on myself. I would grab anyone I could, and I would say, let me show you what I just learned. I fell in love with Reiki.
Uh-huh.
And it became my life.
Uh-huh. And then you met John.
And then I met John. I was just searching for information, everything. I was just starving for a knowledge of Reiki. And I would read and talk to anyone who would talk to me about Reiki. And reading some books, I found more information about your grandmother and about her masters. And they all looked wonderful, but there was something about the name John Gray. And there was a glow around that name, almost a glow, or at least I imagine a glow. And I knew that I had to meet him.
Uh-huh.
I just knew it. I didn't know why. Why him? But I knew that I had to.
Uh-huh.
So I called.
Right. And then you took second degree from him?
And I took second degree from him.
And then did you, you just became friends and someday it felt like, I don't know, I'm just digging a little bit.
Okay, and then we became friends and I we would talk on the phone. At that time, I lived in Northern Virginia.
Right.
And he lived in Gloucester, so we would phone each other. And that led to visits.
Uh-huh.
And one day he asked me to marry him.
And this is before you became a master?
This is before I became a master.
Uh-huh. And you said?
I was speechless.
Oh, speechless, okay.
I was speechless. I wasn't expecting a marriage proposal, and I thought about it for 24 hours. He asked me again, and I said yes.
Uh-huh.
I said yes.
And then after that, after you were married for a while, or?
We still had to put our affairs in order. I had to sell my house in Virginia, and he had to make some arrangements, and
right.
We needed to find a place to live. So that led us on a quest. We wanted to move to a home on the north side of a lake on 3 to 4 acres, which we did. We found our home.
Wonderful.
In New Hampshire.
Wonderful.
And once we did, we came here.
Wonderful. And then you became a master.
And then I started training with him to uh-huh. become a master. And John initiated me in October 1996
uh-huh.
as a master.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh. And what was your, because you had lived with him, of course, for and been very close with him for a couple of years at least, did you have expectations about what it was going to be like to be a Reiki master?
I think that my expectations have been fulfilled, and my expectations was to grow in the knowledge and the experience of Reiki,
uh-huh.
to
uh-huh.
expand and to feel closer to it,
uh-huh.
and also to use Reiki as a tool to help others.
Mm-hmm. Wonderful. Great. We're going to take a station break now. This is Phyllis Furumoto with Reiki, Balancing Form and Essence.
Taking you to the threshold of a dream and beyond. Seventh Wave Network.
Are you tired of carrying a heavy wooden massage table around? Is your back sore? Or do you have imprints of cables and braces on your kneecaps after sitting and giving a Reiki treatment? Try a lightweight Astrolite massage table for maximum comfort. Contact us, Paul or Upasana, at www.portablemassagetables.com. Astrolite, the table of a lifetime.
The new home for visionary positive change. Seventh Wave Network.
You're listening to Reiki, Balancing Form and Essence with Phyllis Furumoto. If you have a question for either Phyllis or her guests, call now. The toll-free number is 1-866-472-5795. That's 1-866-472-5795. Now, back to the show.
This is Phyllis Furumoto with Reiki, Balancing Form and Essence. Our theme today, which is a new one now, is what is mastery and what is it like to be a Reiki master? And I'm visiting with John Gray, who's 91. He's, I would assume, the eldest of the masters that Hawaii Otakata taught and initiated as masters, and his lovely wife, Lourdes Gray, who is also a Reiki master. And I'd like to go back to you, John. And I know that you've taught in the United States extensively all over the country. And I'm just wondering, in your teaching, what do you have an experience or Well, an experience that you would like to share with us? All of, you know, from all your years of teaching, or an insight that you've had?
I don't seem to, it doesn't seem to pop out at me. Teaching is a fluid occupation, and questions, the what we teach comes from our own personal experiences, and what we, how we answer questions from people that are in our classes is also our own way of describing Reiki.
And I, we were speaking a little earlier about the difference between working as a Reiki master and working in the business world.
Yes, there's in the business world, you're one is bound by the conventions of the kind of business that you're in. But in Reiki, the experience has to do with the fellowship of the class, and how it, how, and the fellowship of the class has to do with how one teaches and answers questions. Does that suggest anything?
It suggests that you were a good teacher, John. Because it seems that, you know, in some classes, I think that this, well, in some ways of teaching Reiki nowadays, there is this feeling that this energetic that you call fellowship doesn't really matter, that there is a, it's more technical than it is creating an energetic in the class. And I feel that this, from what I get in your using the word fellowship, which touches me very deeply, I've never thought about it that way, really is about the Reiki master being able to channel this energy of Reiki and be able to connect all the people in the class together with this energy. Is that kind of what you mean when you say the word fellowship?
That's probably right, yeah. And I say probably, I think that's right. Our fellowship is a description of the purpose of teaching Reiki, and has to do with the way we send that information out to touch the people that are in the class.
Do you have any idea how many students you've initiated in the first degree over the years? Have you kept count?
I don't think that I remember a number, but it would be somewhere around 1,000.
Wow. Initiated closer to 20,000.
That's a pile of people.
It is. Now, this is a person who is interested in records, Lourdes, huh?
Yes.
Yeah, I mean, she used to be a banker, so she's into records. And I would imagine that it would be 20,000 in all your years of teaching. And I know that in the what I call the golden age of Reiki in the first 10 or 15 years that we taught, John, up until about 1995 or so. I mean, I know that you were busy beaver, you know, traveling and teaching classes, and I don't know, did you teach like maybe every weekend or?
Yes.
Yeah, every weekend, and you know, out of all those classes. So it's an amazing community that you've created. Whether or not these people actually physically connect or not, they are energetically somehow within this fellowship circle.
And I think that the some purpose of Reiki, which is to deliver energy through the hands, whether to oneself or to another person, that's really the energetic that that I think of when I think of giving classes. And that's the fellowship, because each of those people are familiar with the basics of Reiki, and they also become tuned into the purpose of it, which is to help other people.
In your Reiki practice, have you done mostly teaching, or did you have earlier Reiki practice itself where you treated people on a daily basis?
On a regular daily basis, which includes business days and weekends, I'm helping people and helping people to get rid of illnesses, mental or physical.
Through the treatment process.
Treatment process.
Yeah. Great. Lourdes, do you have a treatment practice here, or?
I do have a treatment practice.
And how do you find that in these days? You know, I feel that, so this is just my summary. I feel that in the days when John and I, in the early 1980s, when we were all, you know, kind of the only ones who were out there teaching and practicing Reiki, that because there was so much demand for classes, it was very difficult to sit in one place and do a lot of treatment. And then in the mid-1990s, the classes kind of dropped off because there were a lot of other variations of the theme, the different forms of classes and so on. So then masters had time to go back to treatment, which is, of course, was my grandmother's primary practice, was treatment. It wasn't teaching. Only in the last few years of her life, the last decade of her life, did she really teach a lot. So it was interesting for me to see that now I feel that masters in the new millennium, since the late 1990s or 2000, now have a very interesting balance of treatment practice and teaching. And I feel like this is an important balance, because I feel like in the early days we got quite into teaching, and I felt really disconnected in some way from the treatment practice. And then the pendulum sort of swung to the other way around, and now we're back hopefully to a balancing place. And I'm just wondering how that's felt for you, because you've been through this bit of shift.
Absolutely. And to me, is just as important to have one and the other as the other. So I can't imagine not having a practice. I love giving Reiki treatments, and I can't imagine not
introducing Reiki to other people. So for me, it's been a challenge at times because we do have a busy schedule, but also a very important part of our life to maintain a balance and be able to do both.
I think that when we give classes, we give classes on the way we have discovered that treatment follows.
Uh-huh.
So treatment absolutely is the important part, but then it's integrating the results and findings of those treatments into classes.
Uh-huh.
Using them as a basis for practical experience, experience that we can share with students.
Well, that was what was so powerful, though, about Hawaii Otakata's classes. Is her, you know, she hardly ever talked about Reiki itself. In my experience, I don't know about in California, but in my experience, her class was filled with these stories of her own experience of treatment. And, you know, they were pretty unbelievable. I mean, for me, when I first started in being a Reiki master, I would attend these lectures and so on, and she would tell these stories that were, for me, totally unbelievable because I couldn't imagine that this could happen. It was beyond my imagination. And though I knew she wasn't lying or wasn't making it up, I also couldn't believe her, so it created this very interesting tension in myself. And then I started treating myself with Reiki, and then I realized, wow, she's really telling the truth. And I was able to relate to her stories myself without having to go, gosh, do you think that really happened? Well, maybe we shouldn't talk about it in public because somebody might want to trace it or something. And all these kind of disrespectful thoughts went through my head. But the minute that I started really accumulating these experiences for myself through treatment, then it was very easy for me to have my own stories of treatment and my own understanding of how profound her practice really was. Because she gave tens of thousands of treatments.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think that one of the most insane stories is about the dead woman who Takata went in while they were figuring out how when to bury her, and all of a sudden the woman got up and said, "What's for supper?"
Yes, give me a bowl of noodles.
Yeah,
I want a bowl of noodles, she said.
Yeah.
That was a pretty outrageous story, and I remember her telling this story like every time she gave a class practically. And she would always say, and the death certificate was above her head. Yeah. And I just decided to give her Reiki, and then she sat up in bed and said, "I want a bowl of noodles," or "What's for supper," or something. So that was one of those unbelievable stories. But then, you know, when I hear the stories of my students and I have my own stories, I think, well, this could have happened, and it did happen. So that was pretty amazing. Do you remember any of the other stories she used to tell, John?
I haven't thought of it. Like, after a while, I'll remember.
Do you remember the story of the blind girl?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Do you want to tell about the blind girl?
The way I remember the story is that this mother and daughter came to see Takata. The daughter had been blind since age 13. You may remember that story, Phyllis.
I don't know if I do or not. I'm really anxious to hear the rest of it.
So apparently there was nothing. The mother had told to Kara there was nothing physically wrong with the eyes.
Uh-huh.
But around the age of 13, the girl went blind. And she had been to many, many doctors on uh-huh. the island. And no one was able to find a reason for the blindness nor a cure. And so after trying for several years, they heard of Takata and decided to have treatments with her. And I remember that in the story, the girl lived in, she did not live in Oahu, but she lived in one, I think it was Maui.
Uh-huh.
She lived in Maui. So your grandmother's insistence, they moved to Honolulu so that the girl could receive treatments every day. And Takara gave her treatments every day. And on the 29th day of consecutive treatments, the girl walked in to Takara's studio and says, "Mrs. Takara, you are wearing a pink uniform and white shoes." And Takara said, "Well, you can see what happened to you yesterday. What else happened to you?" And the girl said, "I had my first menstruation." She had her first period.
Ah.
Isn't that interesting?
Yeah.
And once the she had received sufficient Reiki for the body to return into balance,
uh-huh.
the sense of sight returned
uh-huh. Uh-huh.
along with her
uh-huh.
and
menses.
The sum total of it is that Takata didn't treat only the eyes, the Takata gave her a full Reiki treatment,
right.
treating all parts of the body.
Right. And you know, yeah, go ahead.
And that the problem had to do with an area that was different than just the eyes.
Yes. Yes. Wonderful story. I don't remember that story, so it's great to hear another story.
That is it.
Yeah.
That's one of my favorite stories. And when we teach Reiki, we always tell that story to our students.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh. Well, you know, she did say, though, when she went over the hand positions, that if you treated the ovaries, on the ovary position, just in the lower belly, that with young girls was very connected to the eyes, and that they were very connected. And when I first heard this in 1979 or something, I just thought, oh, my grandmother is so crazy. And again, another thing I didn't believe. But now, of course, every eye doctor that I've talked to says, well, of course. There are two changes in eyes at the onset of menstruation and the when it quits.
At menopause. Oh, really?
Yeah, that our eyes change. And it certainly happened to me. I mean, I had some eye things going on when I started menstruating, but then, of course, at menopause, my eyes were the same for decades, and then they just switched again. And my eye doctor said, oh yeah, it's very usual. So even they now get the connection somehow between these two parts of our bodies. Yeah, very interesting. Very interesting. And John, do you have anything else that you remember or that you would like to say about your training or teaching from Hawaii Takata?
Well, I think the training has to do with actually doing Reiki treatments, and that experiences that Takata may have given during classes don't really come true until the self has those experiences.
Uh-huh. Otherwise they're just stories.
Otherwise they're just stories.
Yeah, that's a really good point, John. a really good point. And, you know, my grandmother used to say that, and I can still hear her saying it, Reiki gives you health, happiness, and long life.
Right.
And I think that you're kind of physical proof of this health, happiness, and long life. I would say 91 is a pretty good age for long life. And you don't seem like this is going to be your last year by any means.
Not likely.
Not likely.
But if it is, then I have the knowledge that in like 3 years from now, I, as a youngster, will tell people that I've had him, that I used to live in where are we now?
New Hampshire.
Ringe, New Hampshire. Yeah.
Uh-huh.
And that my name was John Gray.
And you're going to remember this life.
Yeah.
Good
and
for
I'll
you.
Remember it.
Yeah. That's like a very interesting way of passing it forward, is to remember where you've been.
Yeah.
Beautiful. Beautiful.
Well, I suspect that this isn't the day that we're going to go out on the boat. My goodness, look at that rain going down. Extraordinary.
Well, I just wanted to tell the listeners that in case you were aware of some noises in the background, as we've been talking, the rain went from sprinkling to pouring, and it is now a deluge outside. So it's gotten louder and louder. I hope that you've been able to hear John over the noise of the rain. And then he has a wonderful companion, a yellow Labrador retriever named Ricky. And somehow the energy of this interview has totally excited Mickey, and he was doing some really interesting things on the floor and making funny noises and stuff. So all of that is a part of the Gray household.
Hey.
Yay!
Nicely said.
Yeah, it's wonderful. Thank and it's nice to have those little sound effects sometimes.
Thank you.
Yeah. Lourdes, I'm just wondering from you, in your looking ahead a little bit to your own future and to the future of what you would like to see Reiki become, because I can remember my grandmother saying, you know, I want Reiki to become a household word. I want Reiki to spread around the world. And, you know, that happened so quickly after she died that it was alarming on some level. Like, I don't know how this happened. And it was because there was this exponential thing, you know, like there were 22 of us, and out of those 22 masters, maybe 14 actually taught. And from those 14 people, Reiki has like just exploded. And, you know, in 20 years, there were millions of people practicing Reiki. So now people ask me, what is the future of Reiki? And honestly, I don't know. But I'm wondering if you have some personal vision or some vision for Reiki in general.
I like to see it continue growing and expanding and becoming more and more accepted by mainstream medicine. Even in within our areas, we've had the opportunity to train many medical people, including doctors and nurses and other health care practitioners. So I like it to continue in this course and to continue. And I think it is almost a household word all over the world. But I like that to be there for future generations.
I'd like that to happen. And what the end result of that happening is that we, as practitioners, are helpful, even more helpful in the growing of love and peace and prosperity throughout the world.
And not just when we're at the table doing Reiki, but in the way that we conduct ourselves with others.
Yes.
As a philosophy,
mm-hmm.
a way of life.
Thank you.
Thank you, John. Thank you, Lourdes. It's been a wonderful time talking with you, and I'm sure the listeners will be thrilled.
Okay. Well, thank you, Phyllis. It's a pleasure to have you.
Thank you.
To be here with you.
Mm-hmm. And we give thanks to Hawaii Otakata and to her teachers for bringing us Reiki and for this life that we lead. You know, I feel that being a Reiki master has given me a purpose to my life that is so congruent with who I am as a human being that I can't imagine doing anything else. And I don't know if you both concur with that.
I concur.
All right.
I concur.
Good.
Yeah.
Great. Well, this is it for this today's program. This is Phyllis Furumoto with Lourdes and John Gray in New Hampshire and Mickey on the side. Reiki, balancing form and essence.
We hope that you've enjoyed today's episode of Reiki, Balancing Form and Essence. Be sure to tune in every Thursday at 1 p.m. Pacific Time, 4 p.m. Eastern Time on the Seventh Wave Network and discover how you can find balance from within.